In the vast landscapes of Africa, where innovation aims to meet opportunity, a revolution is unfolding. One that holds the power to transform lives, reshape economies, and unlock the continent's boundless potential. At the heart of this revolution lies an emerging force that defies borders and challenges conventions: cryptocurrency. With its decentralized nature and disruptive technology, crypto carries within it the great promise of rewriting Africa's narrative, transcending barriers and propelling the continent toward a future of unprecedented possibilities. Now, imagine a world where financial inclusion is not just a distant dream, but a tangible reality. Where individuals who were once excluded from the traditional / global banking system now have access to secure and affordable financial services. Picture a landscape where entrepreneurship flourishes, innovation thrives, and wealth is democratically distributed. Envision a transparent governance system that ensures accountability, reduces corruption, and empowers citizens to participate in decision-making processes. This is the transformative power of crypto in Africa, a force that transcends traditional boundaries and embraces the limitless potential of technology. And this is the great promise of crypto for Africa. And this would be our discussion today. My name is Think Decade, and joining me today is Abedemi. So, quick intro: I do operations and governance in Bankless Africa. I also happen to be in production and operation for the Bankless Africa podcast. Beyond Bankless Africa, I'm an L2 contributor in Bankless DAO. I'm also a delegate in various DAO governance, such as Optimism and Arbitrum. Over to you, Abedemi. What's up?
Hi, my name is Abedemi. I am the marketing lead and also community manager over at Bankless Africa. I have been in the DAO / Repto space for close to 2 years now, and I'm very, very interested and also invested with building real-world cases using cryptocurrency and also emerging tech to build real-world cases that solves Africa's coordination problem, because I really believe that Africa is coordination limited. On another hand, I'm also really really passionate about funding and also supporting Web3 builders, building solutions within Africa.
Sounds good. Very happy to have a Moloch Slayer co-piloting with me today. And so we are of the thesis that Africa is in a very, very bad situation, economically, socially, politically, due to the fiat system. And so we are going to delve into that and also back it up with, or make the case on, why crypto is solving a lot of these challenges or disrupting or providing a better system or alternative to some of these traditional systems that we have, i.e. The traditional financial system. And so, Abedemi, just to start this off on the right foot, right? The way I like to think of this is, let's assume we are observers where there are two monetary systems, right? We have the fiat system, and now we have another system, the crypto system. Let's look at how before Bitcoin, before crypto, the only monetary system available was the fiat system. That was the system Africans found themselves in. And so I'm keen and interested in knowing your opinion or your thoughts on how that system has really been bad for Africans on so many levels.
Yeah, I think that everything that surrounds Africa, our financial and also monetary system, was inherited. It wasn't a thing of us, deciding or designing what suits us specifically. When it comes to our climate, our culture, whatever it is that you want to think of that relates to Africa, we inherited a system that was at least in many ways also doesn't really serve everyday people. And I think that that has also stifled us or stifled our progress in a lot of different ways. But I think taking a look at it like from a God's eye view kind of thing. I think we're also like at a major crossroad where we constantly realize that, like, you know, our monetary system or like the fiat monetary system doesn't work for us. And isn't a use case that, like, you know, benefits the majority of Africans. But it seems that, like, we're just like caught or like stuck in a loop where we constantly complain that we can't send money to Ghana, for instance, easily, or we can't send money to the US or, you know, to the UK. And so many passionate and awesome individuals come up to build solutions to solve this problem, but like it still is not enough, or like it doesn't do much. And so like we have so many tech or like fintech stacks, but I still cannot pay for my Spotify subscription from my bank. And that's just really one thing. Remittance is just like one aspect of it. When you come to like people being able to access loan, Nigerians are like 50% of Nigerians are financially excluded. And many people like also argue that like it's as a result of like not having access to internet. But we've also like grown to a space where a lot more people have access to mobile. But again, the stats is still really, really abysmal. But like the sad part about it is that I think that like from a very inclusive perspective, being cut off from finance is a very, very scary reality. Not being even able to access your money from the bank. So much has happened to like so many different people that I know, you know, that they have closed their accounts for like various reasons, or like, yeah, the banks have like, you know, connived with different government agencies to just like shut down their accounts and has left them stranded. Some people cannot access loans because, you know, they are not operating within the traditional business model. You know, they are maybe freelancers or they have small businesses, you know, that don't have, you know, the perspective of large scale, or they don't even have collateral. So they can't access loans and they can't innovate. So I really think that like it is, there's a lot of stifling going on from a God's eye view where we don't really see that the main problem isn't really that we should keep building this tech stack. The main problem is that like fiat system just doesn't work for us. And so we need to rethink the way we approach, our financial system within Africa.
So a couple of weeks ago, right, I tried opening a revenue gateway or a monetization gateway to my Substack. So Substack is basically a platform for creators to put out their works, especially when it comes to writing, podcasting, and the platform offers creators the ability to monetize their creations or their content. I tried enabling that feature and I was told that due to the location where I am, which is in Africa, I'm unable to use the monetization feature, right? Now, when you look at this on a general perspective, it's very, very interesting because traditional financial system has been the only way where society has built wealth, right? Or how individuals have built wealth. Now, the way a country becomes developed, or the way a country becomes a better country or a good country, is individuals acquire wealth, that wealth transition into society level, and society level transitions into the national level, right? So it's simple. If you have a society where a lot of people are billionaires, a lot of people are millionaires, automatically that is going to transition to the societal level, to the national level, right? In African case, at the individual level, you have been blocked from accessing any sort of good wealth building system or mechanism within the traditional financial system, right? So what, are you a tech person who would love to buy stocks? Well, you can't. If you're in Africa, you can't, right? Are you someone who is a creator, who writes, do podcasts or do other things, who would like to monetize your creativity? You can't, because again, the traditional financial system limits it. And so we have found ourselves in this situation where it's almost impossible to actually build wealth, right? And so because of that, society has become, it has become very difficult to live in such a society. And it has also created a lot of other consequences or other effects where people are now, you know, trying to survive by doing anything, right? Whether good or bad, right? So I think traditional systems have been like really, really terrible. And when you look at the poorest countries in Africa, if you look at the top, if you take the top 50 poorest countries in the world, almost all of the countries are African countries, with the exception of a very few. I don't know if, I think less than 5 or maybe 10 out of the top 40 poorest countries in the world are, you know, out of Africa. The rest are all in Africa. Take 25, only one is out of Africa. Top 25, all in Africa, right? So this is the sort of system that the traditional financial system has perpetrated, right? So it's in two parts. We have the individual level and then we have the national level. Abedin, maybe you can touch briefly on the national level, how basically it has prevented the African countries from building.
I think like on a national level, or if we're taking a look at it from a country's perspective, I would say there are various limitations that like come in place when you know, different leaders have visions and you know, they're like, our people deserve better, or, you know, we want to build better solutions for our people, but it just doesn't end up translating at the end of the day. We're like, I think we're like also like forced, or like we also end up having to like deal with so many problems, like when it comes to inflation, being stuck with not being able to export what we want to export, and also not being able to like grow from like a national level to like grow consumption food. And so like we're constantly always having to like export cash crops, because that is, you know, what is needed within the global system. Not necessarily what is needed within the, I would say the, yeah, within the national world itself. We also don't have the freedom to be able to build solutions that like are for us, or infrastructures that benefit everyday people. Instead, like most of the infra that we end up having to constantly build is like infra that like helps exports and also encourages imports. But not exports that like is beneficial to within our system, but like exports that is extractive, yeah, and doesn't really do much for, you know, just everyday people who would not even like be able to like access the benefits of, for instance, exporting steel. Yeah, they're like layers to the problem, to be honest. But I would say that on a large part, it is a structural problem, because it is in the design. It is the way the entire system is designed. And until we are like able to like have honest conversations with ourselves and rethink our approach to like much of what we put up with, I feel like we will continue to be stuck within the structural design.
And so I think that it's really interesting you talk about the lack of freedom to actually build infrastructure and policies that benefit Africans, right? On a national level, and just to piggyback on what you just said, I would recommend listeners to check this article out. In fact, it's a thought piece by Alex Gladstein, a famous Bitcoiner and a human rights activist. It's titled Structural Adjustment: How the IMF and World Bank Repress Poor Countries and Funnel Their Resources to Rich Ones. And the subtitle is, the IMF and World Bank do not seek to fix poverty, but only to enrich creditor nations. And could Bitcoin create a better global ecosystem for the developing world? And he goes on to provide so much insight and so many examples where the fiat system has built a mechanism where Africans have been locked, African nations, right, have been locked in a situation where they are dependent on global institutions, in fact, two major global institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, right? And the policies the World Bank and the IMF institute in these African countries are so extractive that there is no way out to build a better society from those policies, right? And so, for example, Ghana has been to the IMF 17 times in the last 50 years. And each time the IMF gives Ghana loan, right? And the mission of the IMF is to help poor countries become better, right? Transition to become developed countries. Unfortunately, from this article, and all of the information that has been presented here, a case has been made that has not been the case. In fact, everything the IMF and the World Bank has done has been the opposite of the case. And so they use their policy called structural adjustment. And within the structural adjustment, loans are given to African nations and other actually third world countries, right? But Africa has been the most negatively affected from these policies. So they give you these policies and they give you these loans and then they have term sheets. You have to abide by certain things. And a key part of those things are to build infrastructure that facilitates the exportation of your natural resources to the Western world, right? So the policies are meant to extract your natural resources to the Western world. And for a country or for nations, one of the key ways wealth is built is through the natural resources, right? Every country builds wealth on the back of its natural resources. And like we know, and like we always keep saying, Africa has been blessed with so many natural resources. And yet we keep getting poorer and poorer every day, every year. So these are some of the reasons why. In fact, this is the key reason why Africa is getting poorer every year, right? Because the fiat system has made it so that African nations are forever dependent on these global institutions. And these global institutions do not have, African nations' best interest at heart. No, right? They are there to extract value for creditor nations. And when I say creditor nations, the IMF and the World Bank have creditor nations. And these creditor nations are nations that provide capital to these institutions. And don't forget, the World Bank is a development bank and the IMF is a lender bank to nations. So there are countries in the Western world that back these institutions. And these countries include the US, France, UK, Japan, and Germany. And so if you go into how African resources are being extracted and imported, you begin to see where these resources go. And so this is the system that we've been locked in. Now, when you transition, so now at the national level, okay, Abedemi, go ahead.
I think everybody should actually read, especially like if you are a crypto native. I think one of the saddest things that I saw that just made me like close the article and then just like take a breather before I go back to it was there was a section where the author, clearly stated that like for every $1 like giving in aid to African countries, $24 is gotten or extracted in net outflows out of the country, or out of like the continent at large. And I think there was also a key stat so it's right there. So like developing countries received $1.3 trillion dollars, including all income, aid, and investment. For that same year, more than $3.3 trillion flowed out. So that's like an extraction of value two times what was provided or like what was given. And I don't know. I think like for me, the saddest realization that I got from this, because I'm calling it a paper, not an article, is that we are stuck or we are facing problems within two different, you know, factions or like sections. We on a global level, we are constantly like being extracted by the global world or like the global West. And at the same time, our leaders are also extracting from us. So at the end of the day, the people who lose the most are the citizens, because they are the ones who even still end up having to pay back the loans. So I don't know. To me, it just feels like if we don't wake up, or like if we ourselves don't like actually, you know, realize that something is going on, it just will keep being a cycle that like will keep repeating until, you know, there's a day of reckoning and, you know, everything just explodes. Or it won't affect anybody else, but just like everyday African citizens.
The policies are not to your best interest. The policies are not to developing or helping you build wealth or achieve, I think the right word would be achieve financial freedom, right? And when you try to come out with your own way, or you try to explore other alternatives or other means, you are also blocked from there. And like I said, as we stand right now, you cannot monetize a lot of things that you put on the internet. And it's crazy, right? So let's say that maybe your government policies is not helping, but there are ways that citizens can monetize their creations or things or their crafts, right? On the internet. You know, the internet is supposed to be this free place where, you know, it can help you build wealth, etc. Unfortunately, that place too is blocked, all because of the traditional financial system. And it is simple. They say that, okay, our services do not extend to Africa, so Africans can use our services. But here is the thing, right? And we are just going to transition to the next session, but I need to put this out there. Example, you have global companies who provide global services, right? Example, Google, Microsoft, Apple. I mentioned Substack, right? You have all these internet native, the right word would be internet native or tech companies whose services or whose products extend beyond their company countries, right? Or their entity countries, and they are global in nature. And everyone, or most people around the world, are using these services. And in using these services, generate a lot of value to these companies, right? So when it comes to value creation, it's global. Now, but when it comes to value capture, it is limited. They say you cannot buy a Google stock because you are in Africa. You cannot buy Apple stock, but you are in Africa. And everything you do, you have a lot of people using iPhones and almost everyone using Google product and services, right? I mean, this will be published to YouTube. Everything. And so when it comes to value creation, it's global. But when it comes to value capture, which basically helps people build wealth, which helps society live well, it is limited to a certain part of the world. And this has been the hell that traditional financial system, the fiat system, has thrusted on Africa and other third world countries. So, how do we fix this? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I had to be a Bitcoin maxi and I'd always say Bitcoin fixes it. I'd always say that Bitcoin fixes it. But like I do genuinely believe that like Bitcoin does fix it. And as we continue to see that Africa is like one of the fastest growing continents when it comes to crypto adoption, all thanks to Bitcoin, of course. Like we do see it in terms of, you know, the enthusiasm that like people within the continent have, because on so many ways it solves our problems. On so many ways I can actually go into my MetaMask and send money to Think, all thanks to Bitcoin. in the first place, you know, which was like the first layer. I can actually work for somebody and not have to say I don't have a PayPal before I get paid, because they can easily just pay me in cryptocurrency. I can also actually decide to just be a trader, thereby like closing the financial gap or like the wealth creation gap, and, you know, earn money by trading cryptocurrencies. So like there are different layers to it. It solves our remittance problem. It solves our unemployment problems in like so many ways, because there's so much creation that can happen within that layer. And it also, you know, just like provides us like in another avenue to think bigger. Because I feel like when there's no restriction, or when we don't feel stifled by the system that we're in, we can have the space to, you know, actually sit down and think of innovative solutions or think of ways to make things better. And beyond just like the financial, you know, value that like Bitcoin adds, and we have seen so much come from the revolution so far, which all of it, again, started from Bitcoin. But we have seen the rise of NFTs. We have seen, you know, DAOs become a thing, and people even get interested in governing themselves or understanding what it means to exist in a structure like where you are not stifled. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely, right? So the first... This is so fascinating, because you have listened so far, hopefully, and you've seen you have heard all of the problems, right? So how do we fix this? Well, the first one is money, right? So, and Bitcoin offers a better alternative to fiat money. It's hard and it is sound. Fiat money basically has three of the major problems with fiat money is devaluation, inflation, and manipulation. We need to understand this, right? Manipulation, government can get up today and seize your money. Government can get up today and print more money, right? Inflation, we've seen the purchasing power of fiat forever for. It's funny because it happens so much that people who have no idea of these concepts feel them like on a daily basis. You buy groceries today, and next month the prices of that same grocery has tripled or quadrupled, right? So purchasing power is always getting affected. And then you have, like I indicated, the manipulation bit. Government, you know, it's in the control of government. They determine when to print, when to, etc. So when it is in their interests and they want to, for, you know, political reasons and other reasons, they can print more. And at the end of the day, it is the ordinary person that suffers, right? And then it is also very important, like I indicated, being able to seize the money, right? Government can, within the fiat system, government can seize your money at any time. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to add to the section where you're talking specifically about control, because Nigeria had its biggest, or Nigerians did have their biggest realization of how easy it is for governments to like manipulate how you access money in like the recent, you know, election that like we had, where there was so much confusion. They wanted to redesign the naira, and then it was redesigned, but then they didn't open it up, so people couldn't access the new money, and then they banned the old currency, and so it was such a very stressful time for a lot of people, because that also like affected the prices of things, because like obviously, you know, money became scarce. You know, being able to access your own hard-earned money became scarce. So there was inflation. People were accessing their money or like withdrawing their hard-earned currency like times three the charge. People, you know, they were charging 1,000 naira for you to like withdraw 2,000 naira. And like, yeah, I think that I would say like for many of the Nigerians listening here today, that's like a very, you know, what happened recently is just like a clear, or like the first, like, because we all experienced it. So it's just like a clear example of what happens when you leave financial systems to centralized organizations or like even government in, bodies. So yeah.
And again, in all of these, it is the ordinary African that suffers the most, right? So it's so disheartening because it's like you Africans are at the bottom of all of this, like the far end or the far receiving end of this, all this, you know, all this very bad stuff, you know. So for example, with fiat money, of course, you have, like we indicated, control, right? This is how it happens. The highest level of control of fiat money is with the US, because the US have the world reserve currency, right? And they have the when it comes to fiat money, they have control at the highest level. And so what that happens is that all other countries, and especially African countries and third world countries, report to the US. And so, like we indicated, the IMF and the World Bank is just an institution that, you know, that is used to control various countries' monetary policies. And so now you have African governments who, you know, who are controlled, and monetary policies are trusted upon them in a way that is not good. And they also now come in and make bad monetary policies on the people. So it's like, yo, what is this? It's like you are caught in this such a shitty situation where all the things trickle down to you, you know? So, and this is where Bitcoin shines, right? So Bitcoin solves all of this because, one, it took the control out of the hands of government and institutions and said, what if we could have money that you can't control? Money that is programmed, right? So that's the first one. So money that you can't control means money that you can manipulate. Then the second one is with inflation. And inflation is like a devil, right? It has robbed people so much of their sweat and blood that it's like a silent killer, wealth killer. It's perpetually killing people financially. So Bitcoin says, okay, what if we could have a currency where inflationary, it is programmed, where nobody can actually control or manipulate its inflation, right? And Bitcoin would get to a point where inflationary, it becomes negative, because it is going to become deflationary. And so imagine that is some of the properties of hard money, where the inflation is checked, and then also it gets to a point where it becomes deflationary. And so that is with Bitcoin. Again, you have the control is very important because nobody controls Bitcoin. It is programmed, and everyone knows the quantity that is available and will be available forever. So this is what makes Bitcoin phenomenal. This is what makes Bitcoin radical in terms of the types of money that we have. Another part is because nobody controls Bitcoin, nobody can determine who should send Bitcoin to who. And this is one of the greatest invention when it comes to money in our current world, right? Nobody can tell you who or who you can't send money to. And in so doing, who and who you can't transact with economically. And so like Abedemi said, now wherever you are in the world, you can send someone money, right? And for Africans, it is drastic. Like, it's so impactful. Now imagine, Abedemi is Nigeria, I'm in Ghana. Just, you know, we are not far from each other, and we can't transact like simple transactions. You can't send someone money in the traditional financial system, like the fiat system. It's so crazy. You think it's so crazy and inhuman, right? Like it's so crazy and inhuman. And so Bitcoin comes in and say, okay, we are breaking down all of these barriers and there will not be any need to, you know, to stifle people in transacting with each other. We are making sure that we have a money that no central authorities or organizations or governments can easily control or can control. We are also having money where it is not, the inflation is not at the whim and caprices of people who can inflate the supply or print more to devalue the wealth of people. And so this is Bitcoin. And so it is not surprising that for the last decade, the best performing currency has been Bitcoin.
To be honest, you've really actually covered the nitty gritty of it. And I think I would say the reality, because I feel like when it comes to things like Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, many people are confused because they don't really understand, okay, what is it exactly about? But being able to like explain to people that, take away what it is really about and look at what it can do for us, like what it can do for you as, you know, an average African, like how, for instance, let's say, you know, Spotify adopts cryptocurrency. So I don't have to wait for a bank. I can just subscribe to my Spotify using cryptocurrencies. It's the same with my Apple Music or like even my Apple ID. Like I can pay for subscriptions with cryptocurrency without having to worry or like without having to constantly go through the entire, your card has been rejected or your transaction has been rejected or you have been, I think I wanted to pay about $1.6 3 days ago and it took me like 1 week to be able to do because I needed to open a digital wallet and then request for a dollar card and then pay for the dollar card just because I wanted. And then I think I ended up, you know, paying 3,000 naira to be able to pay for the dollar card. But what I wanted to pay for was just like around, you know, 8,000 plus naira. And yeah, there's so many layers to this. But I think the saddest thing that having Bitcoin has helped us realize as Africans is that our continent is designed for extraction, not necessarily for like internal value creation. The way it was designed, it was really just, you know, to take things out and not necessarily for us to create our things or like things that like, you know, help us on a grand scale. And it is kind of sad, I would say. It's a sad realization.
Indeed, it is sad. Very, very sad. But also, we are happy that we now have a better alternative, right? Where we can even do micro payment and micro transaction. Like you said, how the hell does it take you like 1 week to be able to figure out how to send like $1.6 or $2? Like, how crazy is this? But with Bitcoin currently lightning all over the place, you could basically send cents, right? And one of the things too that that is fascinating is there's been like a lot of attempts to help in this regard, especially with remittances or sending money to each other. And the crazy thing is that the traditional financial system is so extractive that you have to be able to send certain amounts because of the fees for it to make sense. Right? So, there are some amounts that the fees are more than the amount. And so it discourages people from, you know, everyday transactions, like sending $5 to each other, $10, $20, $50. Right? And in a very well-connected society, in a society with good money and good financial system, these are the everyday transactions. These are the every minute, every second transactions. Someone is sending someone $5, $10. It's all over the place, right? Unfortunately, in the traditional financial system, you can't do this because, again, it's so extractive that there are exorbitant fees associated with these transactions. And so for you to be able to even do a payment to someone who is maybe in a different country, you have to factor in the cost and be able to determine whether it is even reasonable to send. That's how crazy the financial system is. And that's why it's so fascinating, and we are so happy that Bitcoin is able to help in this regard, right? Where you can now, via Lightning, you can send someone what any amount, micropayment, $5, $1, $2. And it's almost, the cost is so negligible that in some situations you say it is zero. So this is the power that Bitcoin has unlocked. And in solving the money, it has spared, or it has brought about a lot of innovation, right? It has brought about a lot of innovation. And one such key innovation is Ethereum, Web3, and the EVM ecosystem. And so you remember we gave an example that even when Africans want to explore other ways to build wealth on the internet, they are constrained. They are unable to do so because, again, the internet, the fiat system has been integrated into the internet and has led to a lot of gatekeeping, and a lot of restrictions. And so now when Bitcoin solved, or Bitcoin brought us hard money, a couple of visionary people said, okay, what if we can unlock this innovation that Bitcoin has brought and also build an internet infrastructure that unlocks or breaks down the barrier that traditional financial systems have incorporated into the internet? And so this is where the Web3, Ethereum, and the EVM movement came about. So this, let's explore this too and see how awesome this is for Africans. Do you want to go first, Abedemi?
I would leave you to cover a lot of the section, but I think that what I just want to say is that I think that there's really something beautiful in people sitting down together and, you know, having that vision, especially like for builders like Vitalik. Because again, I realized that if we were just stuck with Bitcoin, it would have been another sort of problem where we are just like caged in the we're just caged. While Bitcoin is great, there would not have been the space for us, you know, to be able to create our own. Or like to be able to create things that like are native to us, again, which is what Ethereum basically is.
And so, use cases, right? Bitcoin is very straightforward. It's not meant to be anything other than great money, better money over fiat system or fiat money, right? So, I think sometimes people chastise Bitcoin a bit for not having additional functionalities, but I think that it's great in its purest form of trying to solve money and nothing else, right? Because we are also dealing with technology that comes with certain constraints if you want to add more use cases. With that said, so Ethereum is programmable money, right? It introduces the concept of programmable money, where individuals and organizations can create and deploy their own custom tokens, in quote, you could say money, and smart contract on the blockchain. And it's very interesting because we haven't even mentioned blockchain yet. By the way, all this technology is possible because of the blockchain, right? So now, if we are able to have programmable money, what should we apply it to? Well, we can apply it to anything we want. And one such thing, there are so many ways we can explore. There are so many things we can explore here, but we are going to limit it, right? And just talk about the internet. So the concept of the programmable money has been applied to the internet itself. So what if we could have an internet that unlocks value creation and value capture at a global scale? So that has been the Ethereum movement in a nutshell. And so what this means is that new forms of financial primitives have been built on top of Ethereum. And so, and on top of the internet, because you can access these financial primitives of new financial stuff on via the internet, right? So now this is so I'm getting overhyped, but I'm going to calm down a bit, right? The concept of the programmable money has been applied to the internet to create a lot of innovative things. One example is DeFi, right? That is decentralized finance. Again, we did mention that as an African, you cannot access internet native companies, like shares, right? They are shares, and you cannot capture value from internet native companies. And so what Ethereum has done is that now it enables you to actually capture that value. So anything that is put on Ethereum, any value that is put on Ethereum, you can capture it wherever you are in the world. So that can be an internet native company or entity that have services, various types of services, etc., right? It could be a financial service. And so with the DeFi movement, now Africans are able to access various financial products and services on the internet without any boundaries, without any gatekeeping. Like it's so crazy. It when you think about this, right? Like, again, we did say that you couldn't access any financial market. Which financial market could you have accessed to buy Google shares, to buy Google stock, to trade, you know, to trade all of this thing, but you couldn't. But now with crypto, you can, right? And not just that, you can do lending, you can do borrowing, and you can engage in a whole lot of other things, right? So that is what DeFi, that is DeFi now. So programmable money, Ethereum and its technology has unlocked this. And so what we are calling it is like an internet of boundless value, right? So now almost everything that you couldn't access, or the aim is that almost everything that fiat system has blocked or get kept, you can now access it via decentralized applications. And Ethereum enables the creation of these decentralized applications. And it's been huge, right? It's been huge. So we'll give a couple of examples, right? I'll let you talk briefly about DAOs and how Africans are now capturing value from DAOs, which are basically global entities, right? So you do give us so fascinating.
Okay. So I feel very personal about DAOs, because it is one of the biggest layers that we can use to slay Africa's Moloch. I would leave Think to share a link to give you an idea as to what we're talking about when we talk about Moloch, because I know that many people might be a bit lost. But DAOs on a large scale could potentially help us solve so many of the problems that we have on a continental level, because it taps into the tokenization, but like at the same time it also like presents you with very, very new ways of thinking when you exist within communities, or like when you exist within a society. DAOs, in short, are decentralized autonomous organizations, and I think you should think about DAO like a Facebook group, where instead of just having one or two admins controlling the entire operations of the Facebook group, it is open and you guys can get to vote who your admin is. If you even want to have one, I think you should have one. You can get to vote who your group admin is. You can get to pull resources together to pursue any kind of shared mission that you want to pursue. Say, for instance, you want to like rent out a shop, you guys can come together as a DAO and like use or tap into the awesomeness that are smart contracts and also programmable money, and also decide how your collective store that you have bought will be governed, or the operations around it, who gets to restock, who gets to be in charge of this. So I think on a practical level, that'll show us what it means when we pursue decentralization in governance, even at your workplace. If you think about like so much of the work structure that we have right now, it is top down. You have like your CEO, you have your investors and stakeholders, and then you have like key individuals like your HR, you know, your CEO and all of those things. And those individuals get to like decide, not like make a decision as to the direction of the company. But it's not just even from an employee perspective, even from a customer or a user perspective, you would mostly, you know, leave the responsibility to the CEO, you know, or to investors. But the problem there is that many times, as we continue to see, these individuals pursue in the interest of investors and stakeholders, not necessarily the interest of their users or whoever has like shares or like whoever has even like committed themselves to the company, not even in the interest of the employees, to be honest. At the end of the day, for centralized workplaces, especially within the Web2 ecosystem, it is always about protecting the interest of shareholders and also investors. But like a DAO literally just like flips the script and it opens up everything. So in a DAO sense, you don't necessarily have to, you know, apply or like send in your CV and beg for somebody for a job and to give you a job and then, you know, go through like five processes of interview. You can actually, you know, get involved in a DAO by actually showing your work, like by showing your enthusiasm to show up. So instead of like that gatekeeping where you have to go through so many processes again, which is sort of like the same way financial system is, where if you don't have a degree, there are some certain jobs that you can't get. You did not maybe go get an MBA. If you didn't go to some certain colleges, there are some certain jobs you can't get, regardless of your talent or like regardless of what you could offer. So like within the DAO space is really different because half of the time you have to actually show your enthusiasm, or you have to actually show that like not only that you know what you're doing, but you are also like really, really interested or invested. So like many people within the DAO space are working from the space of having showed work or having showed enthusiasm to like show up. The more enthusiasm you have to do work and also to cooperate within your DAO ecosystem, the more responsibilities and the more work you keep getting. So like that's how it works. But from another level, DAOs also provide us access to capital. There's so many DAOs that are currently existing that are really just, you know, the design is really just people coming together to pull funds together to maybe invest in other Web3 startups. You know, Cabin is right there. Cabin is actually building physical cities. Yeah, they're like building stuff physically. All of this really just is possible because different people from different places on Earth decided to come together and pull their resources or pull their funds together. At the same time, they also, none of the work that you also do is for free because you also get paid because you are doing work. So if you think about it from a large scale perspective, DAOs have the potential to provide access to finance, again, or like service markets that have been overlooked. And at the same time, it also like has the potential to like provide employment opportunities for many individuals. So many Africans within the DAO space right now are like working and also, you know, getting to earn in the DAO's crypto in the DAO token. So, but that's just like really from a finance perspective. If we now come to the operations or governance perspective of it, it is a lot different, or there's a very different reality when you are actively involved in how your organization or even like your startup operations happen within like Web2 startups. If there's any major decision, like let's say they want to hire a marketing lead, for instance, nobody comes to consult you. You just find out that they have hired a marketing lead. But within a DAO, you have to, like, people have to have a say as to like many major decisions. Like if you want to hire somebody, a lot of the time you would find that like there's a proposal up on the forum and everybody's saying that like, hey guys, we need a marketing person to do so and so, and this is our budget. And like, I think the point is just like there's transparency and there's clarity. And so you are participating in the operations and like, in how the organization or like even the startup is governed, because, you know, DAOs are like, they can be way more than just like organizations or like, you know, or like nonprofits. They, you know, you can't run your startup as a DAO. The point of it is just like major decisions, or like many of the decisions that you would naturally take with just a few key people. You have to involve your employees. That's like people that work with you in the DAO, and also, you know, general people who have invested in your company. So it's just, I would say that like it's just a way to like co-create with your community. And your community in this instance, you know, include your customers, not just your investors, your customers, you know, everybody who is actually invested or involved in the progress of your company. Yeah, I would say like DAOs are ways for us to co-create and coexist within communities. But there are really different layers to that. But if we bring that down to an African perspective, the most important things that DAOs do for us is that they help us see just how much trouble we are in when it comes to our governance. Personally, from my own perspective, having contributed within DAOs, I have adopted so many of the Web3 and also DAO mental models. I have learned to be self-governing and, you know, to make decisions that like are not just like from a selfish perspective, which is, you know, mostly what governing yourself is about, but like also from the perspective of realizing that I coexist with other people within my immediate environment and also like within the bigger scale. But if we did get DAOs right, I think we'll be able to flip or like, yeah, turn around, you know, the way our governance is currently operated within Africa, which is kind of sad. But yeah, that's just a summary, to be honest. There's a lot more.
So one aspect of DAOs in how they impact Africa for me is their ability to help with employment. One of the fundamental issues that have plagued Africans forever is the lack of job opportunities, right? All over the place, people are unemployed. What DAOs do is that they unlock the opportunity for Africans to export their talents, export their skills to on a global level, right? So DAOs do so well to break down the barriers of who and who an organization cannot employ, and makes it more global and inclusive. And so like Abedemi said, it's not too much on your CV, but what you can actually do and how you can demonstrate them. And DAOs provide the opportunity for you to actually demonstrate this, right? So imagine Google, right? Being able to enter into Google and demonstrate your skills anytime. And then through that, Google can employ you. It's not possible. But DAOs do that. So I think it's very, very important. And I think it's profound. So there are, like Abedemi said, the Ethereum, the Web3 vision has unlocked so many things. To sum it up is now on internet scale, on a global scale, Africans can now participate in capturing value from various activities and various entities or various internet native organizations. And a lot of these internet native organizations are taking the form of DAOs, which are helping to solve unemployment problems in Africa, right? And also the flip side is that African creators can now export their creations, export their talents, export anything of value to the rest of the world. And in doing so, they can sell it, or they can generate revenue out of it. A typical example is this meme. This is like all over the place during the coronavirus era, where, you know, the Paul Bearers, the dancers. This meme sold for $1 million. I want you to point me like anywhere in the history of Africa or in the history of the world, of us, where, you know, such a thing is possible, right? This is a meme that was created somewhere in Ghana, and the internet blew it up, and Web3 gave it value, immense value. Now, this existed on the traditional internet. In fact, I'm going to use that word, the traditional internet. You know, and people used it all over the place. And I'm pretty sure, you know, there are even opportunities outside there who got value from this because they have monetization unlocked for them. But the creators of this couldn't have monetized this on the normal internet. But the moment this went into crypto, Web3, it got minted or it got transformed into the form of NFT and then sold. And so what Web3 is enabling is Africans being able to now put out their works, their creations, their talent, everything of value out there, and people can, you know, can buy these things or can give or can exchange value for Africans, right? And so it breaks down that barrier too, and it's really, really important. So as we all know, we are currently in the bear market, and in the bear market, it's easy to lose hope because of market conditions and because of sometimes, you know, bear market impact the speed at which builders are building because of lack of capital and a whole lot of other things. I saw a tweet from one of the famous media guys in crypto, David Hoffman or Ryan Sean Adams, one of them, who said crypto feels a bit lost right now. What should we do? And I think this is the kind of conversation we should be having. We should remind ourselves, we should remind the world, we should remind everyday people about the impact that crypto is making and how gradually it is, you know, it is moving towards this great promise that is promising certain part of the world and the entire globe or the entire world as a whole. So if the bear market is making you feel a bit hopeless, we hope this episode has been able to rekindle some sort of hope in you. And if you're a builder, we hope this has sort of revived or added more to your builder spirit to keep building and to keep trying to use this technology to solve our problems that impact everyday people. Thank you very much. Until the next one, stay relentless and peace out.